Welcome to the Making of the Cast, a podcast about Christianity and leftist politics. I'm your co-host, Dean Detloff.
And I'm your other co-host, Matt Bernico.
Matt, it's been a few weeks. We took some time off from podcasting. You went to the U.S. I went to the U.S. We both survived being in the belly of the beast. What was it like to be back in a country that you just left?
You know, I was expecting kind of a breath of fresh air, like all these things I missed and had grown in want of or missing. And then I got there and it was just exactly the way that I left it. And it was kind of a letdown. So it was great to see family and friends. And that was all very nice and lovely. But the rest of it was just Taco Bell's the same no matter what you do, you know. That's what I'm trying to say. It doesn't change from day to day. Taco Bell is the same. Dean, what was your big trip to the U.S. like?
Pretty good. I went to Chicago. I went to the wedding of Josh Christensen, who very long time listeners of this podcast might remember. He's been on the show a few times to talk about Paul Virilio and whatever else. Weird military stuff, I guess. A wild character. Yeah. Love Josh. It was great to see him get married. Really fun. And Chicago was great. Met a few podcast listeners there. That was great. And all around, I think I've been out of the U.S. long enough that now I can go back and it's fun to be there because it feels like visiting a different country instead of my home country. I've been in Canada long enough now that it feels exotic, even though I've been to Chicago a bunch of times.
Yeah, that makes sense. I got to meet some podcast listeners too. It's a bummer that we got to meet them separately, though. That seems unfair to me.
I agree. It was very, very weird to be like, hey, you guys just met Matt and now you're meeting me, but we haven't seen each other in a long time. But anyway, Chicago's great, and one day we'll do a Magnificast live episode to two people. That's basically what happened over the course of 2 weeks.
Sounds good. Well, we're getting back on the horse after having so much time off. Is getting back on the horse the right? That can't be the right metaphor, but we're gonna do it anyways. We thought we'd ease our way back into the podcast rather than talking about some hard hitting or esoteric philosophy. This week, we decided that we were going to get back into the spirit of the pod by doing our favorite goofs, which are talking about youth group icebreakers and also reading the most pressing theological questions from reddit.com.
That's right. I think it's important to shake off the dust this way. I'm excited to do it. I have a couple of games here that we can play together, Matt. The first is just a series of Christian icebreaker questions that I got from disciple.org.nz, some great New Zealand Christians, I guess. And I thought I'd just ask you a few of them and kind of see what you think. I think they're great, and you can also hold on to these for next time you're at church and you need to meet somebody new. You can just walk up to them at coffee hour and ask them one of these and kind of see what happens.
Okay, yeah, no, sounds great.
The first one, I feel like because of the Bible study and because you've been so much more diligent than me, I want to ask you, if you could change places with a Bible character, whom would you choose and why?
This is such an easy question. None of them. I don't want to be any of the Bible characters. They lived hard lives. And also, on top of all that, they did not have regular bathrooms, which I think is a huge turnoff for me. I don't want to go back there. You know what? I'm sure Solomon's temple was really great and full of majesty, but it did not have a bathroom. And that's going to be a pass for me.
There must have been some golden area with a kind of big hole in the ground or a trough somewhere for sure.
Yeah, but not for regular people like me. I mean, for Solomon, sure. I'm sure he got the fancy golden toilet, but for me and my regular butt, I don't think so.
All right, fair enough. Let me ask you this though. Instead of if you could change places with the Bible character, you have to do it. You've been cursed by an evil witch and you do have to pick one of them. And who's it going to be? If you had to pick, who would it be?
If I had to pick, it would be King David, because I could be a really kind of mediocre ruler, but everyone would think I'm really great. And would be pretty cool for me, I think.
True. Plus, you kind of already know what's coming, so you can avoid a few of those mistakes down the road.
That's true. A sort of Back to the Future-esque scenario where I get to steer King David in the right direction and tell him, that woman you see taking a bath on the roof, please avert your eyes. Forget about her. I'm telling you, man, it's not good for you. Yeah, Dean, if somebody had your arm in a arm lock.
Wow, a dreaded arm lock. Yeah, I would definitely.
Yep, it's bad.
I'd probably change it to Jacob because he seems like a guy who could get out of an arm lock since he did wrestle the Lord.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. He did a lot of walking, though.
He did a lot of walking, but I'd want that knowledge when I get transported back to the prison, just to make sure I could get out of that arm lock.
Yeah, fair. Okay. Makes sense. That's a good one. Man, there's so many people in the Bible that you wouldn't want to be, though.
It's true.
I think, like, most of them I just wouldn't want anything. I wouldn't want to come close. The bathroom situation is huge for me. And so many of them are killed in battle or eaten by a bear or have a tent peg driven through their head. You know, all kinds of bad stuff happening in the Bible to people. I don't want that to be me.
It'd be pretty funny, I feel like, to be Lazarus, though. Because someone would be like, didn't I just, like, I just went to your whole funeral and everything. And then you could be like, yeah, it was a huge prank. Sorry.
Yeah, that's a good point. Lazarus would be okay. I mean, there still is the bathroom situation that I do have to think about that I'm apparently obsessing over right now. But not being dead. Now, that's a great change, a great switch. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, you have to die again, but you kind of know what's coming.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a big deal. Enoch, okay, what about him? He just gets taken up into heaven. He doesn't even die.
True, zoomed right away. That's pretty good. Let me ask you.
Plus, you get to see all the great big monsters in Nephilim, and we do love that. So
that's true.
That could be cool.
That could be cool. I'm sure they look exactly like Darren Aronofsky imagined them. Let me ask you, let's try two more out of this list. I won't keep it here forever, but I feel like the good folks at Disciple.
So far it's going great.
Yeah, I mean, they've worked really hard to curate these. Let's see, scrolling through here, so many good ones, so many very funny ones. Oh, here's one. What do you not want said at your funeral?
Man, I feel like anyone can say whatever they want at my funeral. It's fine. I won't be there. You know, that's... I'll be in heaven with my perfect spherical body. So just say whatever you want about me.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, I think it's fine. What about you? Do you have like a specific thing that would be like your worst nightmare?
My worst nightmare. Let's see. I'm sleeping. I'm having a bad dream. It's my funeral. And what does someone say that wakes me up in a cold sweat? Probably something about, I don't know, probably something about basically anything I said from like 2003 to 2012 or so. Basically, if anybody quoted me from that time, I would not want that said.
Okay, now that you say that, that has given me a lot of anxiety. If there are any like records of things I said during youth group, and if someone were to bring those to my funeral, I might come back as a ghost, because that is a very scary thing to happen.
They're reading your own adolescent Reddit questions on Christian subreddits at your funeral.
They're reading your own AOL chat logs at your funeral.
Okay, great. How about who's your favorite Christian that is a celebrity?
Martin Luther King Jr. He's a celebrity.
Okay, that seems like cheating.
Okay, fair. Toby Mac. Just kidding. That's a bad answer. I'm trying to think of somebody who's not problematic, and I'm having such a hard time. Reese Roper.
A celebrity to an incredibly small group of people, but fair. I'll take it. The judges are nodding their heads.
I don't think you said anything that's been that bad. I think it's okay. Do you have one in particular?
You know who I'll say is Paris Hilton, and I'll tell you why. Because one time, I forget when it was, she went to jail at some point in the earlier mid-2000s, and she said that she had found Jesus Christ in jail. And I remember at the time, all these evangelicals I know were so cynical about it, and they were like, no way did Paris Hilton find Jesus Christ. And they were all making fun of her and her racy career and so on. And I thought to myself, you know what? I feel like this is the ultimate test of whether or not you really believe in Christianity, that Paris Hilton herself could, in fact, be a Christian. And I feel like I like to imagine that Paris Hilton did give her life to Christ in prison, but she still is just like being Paris Hilton. I think that's great. Good for her.
That's a great point. She did not really change her life in a really substantive way. And maybe that's good. You said Paris Hilton. I did suddenly realize that this question does mean like which real celebrities. I'm surprised by that, I guess, because I don't think of celebrities as people, first of all, which is, I think, bad of me. maybe should change my life in that way. But I don't really think about celebrities being Christians. But did you know that Carrie Underwood, Dennis Quaid, Tom Hanks, they're all Christians?
Mm-hmm. I knew Tom Hanks. I think he's even Orthodox.
Is he really? Oh, yeah, he's Greek Orthodox. I've just Googled it, and you're correct. And isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
What about Julie Chen? She's Christian. She's a celebrity.
She's Christian, but in a way that I maybe don't like. Julie Chen, for those who don't know, okay, this is a quick digression that's so important for us to do on this podcast about Christianity and leftist politics. Julie Chen, she is the host, the longtime host, the over a decade long host of Big Brother US. And she's great. I mean, she's a great host. We all love her. She's up there. She says "but first" all the time. And it's fantastic. But she had this like wild sort of on-air like seasons long exploration of how exactly she wanted to be a Christian on TV. And like at the end of Big Brother, this reality show about backstabbing your friends, she would say like Bible verses or kind of vague Christian pieces of advice as like a sign off. And she was like looking for the right one. And she did finally settle on one that has become, I guess, unofficially the routine one, which is love one another, which I think is great. That's a good kind of like Christian principle that translates to a secular audience. But she does every time somebody's in the show and they're like vaguely Christian, she really makes a point to remind them about how great it is that they both love God. I think that's really too bad. She shouldn't do that on TV.
One time she asked a contestant who was voted off the show directly to their face, "Do you love God?"
That's right.
And the contestant was just like, "Yeah, sure."
Yep. So all that to say, not my favorite Christian who is a celebrity, but a good person to mention. And I'm glad that we've really educated our listeners on that. I did think of one other one. This does not come from disciple.org.nz. It just comes from my own brain. And I feel like because it just occurred to me, it must be the work of the Holy Spirit. So I feel like I should tell you this question. Okay. VeggieTales. You've heard of it. We all know it. We love it. There's a lot of vegetables in there. They tell you Bible stories. If you had to add a vegetable to the cast of VeggieTales, what kind of vegetable would it be, and what would be their sort of vibe? You know, I'm thinking like Larry, he's kind of the comedic relief, a bit of the, you know, kind of the one of the Marx brothers or the Three Stooges of the VeggieTales. You got Bob, he's kind of the straight man of the whole show. Archibald, he's a big stuffy asparagus. Who's your dream veggie cast?
Oh my gosh, this is such a tough one, because there are so many characters that do exist already, and just like throwing another one in there would be really hard. I vaguely remember there being like a potato character who was like a miner or something. Not to be okay, hang on. Let me pause this really quickly. There's another potato character who is like the arch villain to Larry Boy called Motato, and that's not who I'm talking about. There's a potato character though who's like a miner, and I think that'd be really great if there was just like if he was like an overtly sort of pro union, ready to fight the government over company towns or something, character on VeggieTales. That would be really cool. Who would you add?
Man, you know, I ask you these questions, and for some reason, I don't expect for them to be turned back on me. You'd think I'd be thinking about it when you're talking.
Every time that happens, though.
But I'm too good at listening. That's my problem. Let's see. If I had to do one, I guess it would be, what's that really stinky fruit? Like, I forget the name of it, but it's like notoriously stinky. But if you're brave enough to eat it, it's delicious.
Yeah, a durian.
Yeah. A durian. Exactly. It's a durian. And I'm going to say his whole job is just to kind of maybe provoke the other VeggieTales with like vague atheist related questions, just to kind of give them a chance to do some apologetics for the kids out there. Like, you know, Bob's at the end, he's got his good word, telling you all the good lessons they learned in the good book or whatever. And then this stinky durian appears just at the edge of the sink or whatever. And he's like, yeah, but could God make, you know, a fruit so stinky that even he couldn't smell it? And Bob has to figure that out.
I think that's cool. An atheist vegetable. Man, why haven't they done that yet? That's my question. That's a great idea.
Yeah, well, it's mine. Copyright TM, TM, TM. And big idea, you can get at me if you want to use it.
Okay. VeggieTales people, please call Dean to get this Richard Dawkins vegetable on the show.
Richard Durian.
That's the thing about Richard Durian. The thing about him, though, is that while he's an atheist, he does think that Christianity is kind of a good idea, sort of culturally speaking, but not philosophically.
Yeah, his views stink. You know what I mean?
Okay. Dean, that's great. That concludes that section of the show, and I'm really excited that we did it.
I'm glad you made that executive decision.
Yeah, we're moving on now. Cool. So another goof on the show that we do from time to time, and then one that we're doing right now, is we go to the people. We don't ask them what kind of questions they have, but we just kind of let them self-report what questions they have about Christianity, theology, sort of the social aspects of the religion, as they appear on Reddit.com, and then we bring them to you and we answer them and give sort of definitive answers to them is the key. Dean, I have... over the months that we've been kind of like gone and replaying old episodes, I've collected kind of a lot, and you have a lot to answer for. I'm going to help you, I think.
Because I'm going to turn them back on you, just so you know. So be thinking about it as I answer these questions.
No promises. I will not be thinking about it. I will just be surprised every time you ask them to me. But here's the first question. So this is from the Catholic subreddit r/Catholicism, which is full of extremely strange
good
people.
Quality questions, I'm sure.
Yeah, just kidding. They're normal Catholics, which I think does mean they're weird people. It's fine. But anyways, the first question is: I'm surrounded by people at church, but nobody says "peace be with you" to me. I don't look. Then they say, why? I don't look weird and I don't act weird. So, Dean, you're at church and you want to get a lot of people to say peace be with you to you. How do you do that? How do you get the maximum amount of people to shake your hand and say peace be with you at church?
Okay, these are two different questions and I will treat them accordingly. Because the first question is, why aren't people giving this person the peace? And I'm going to come at it in two ways. First of all, offering the sign of peace is a finite resource. You only have so much time to do it. You know that once the choir starts singing, you are going to have to turn around slowly, even though nobody told you to, and stare at the front until the priest kind of gets their act together or whatever. And I'm going to say it must be that you're just sitting in the wrong spot. I mean, people can only turn in so many directions. You're not going to, I mean, you might get kind of a 360 degree turn for peace, but probably not. Most likely it's going to be kind of 270 degrees. You must be at the back of the church and maybe kind of in a poorly lit area. And I think by the time the finite resource of peace is given out, you know, there's just none to go around. There's not enough time.
That makes sense. Now, that's huge. The church real estate that you're occupying, I'm sure, has a lot to do with it. You got to be I don't know, where would you say, like sort of middle, center mass?
I mean, it depends how much you want. If you're feeling really depleted, you might as well sit up front and just turn around. I mean, at that point, everybody is in your 270 degrees and there's no way that they can miss you. So I feel like at that point, you're challenging them not to give you the peace sign.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That makes sense. What would you say about leaving your pew, going into the aisle and starting to make your way down that way?
Mm-hmm. That's pretty good. I do think you're going to need a t-shirt or something that can sort of communicate it. Like maybe a shirt that says peace me, you know, something that really obvious that everyone will know what it means. Peace me. Give me that sign. I don't know exactly what the motto would be, but I feel like, you know, you could kind of workshop a bit with some parishioners and come up with something really good.
So far, this person just has a shirt that says, don't worry, I'm not weird on it. And that's not working. So
exactly. Yeah.
Peace me seems like it'd be better.
I think, the t-shirt is on the front, it says peace me. And on the back, it says, give me that sign. So that if they're sitting behind you, they're reading, give me that sign for the entire mass. And then when you turn around, it says peace me. And they're like, oh, that's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And the same, somebody who's sort of sees it in the front, it says peace me. What are you talking about? You turn around to give the peace sign. They say, give me that sign. By the time you turn back around, they'll have already been looking at you because they're reading your shirt. It's a foolproof plan. You're going to get a lot of peace from this t-shirt.
I love it. That sounds great. Now, what's your philosophy when it comes to passing the peace? When you're the one that's kind of initiating the interaction, are you just like shoving your hand out there to get them to peace you, or are you waiting for them to extend? Like, what's the sort of situation?
Yeah, I used to be a big handshaker. These days, I think in a post-COVID world, I've become more of a peace sign giver. I usually I try to make eye contact with as many people as I can within that sort of finite amount of time, but I'm not too worried about making sure I get everybody. You know what I mean? Like, I'll get maybe six or seven, if it's somebody I know, I'll give them a hug first. Of course, that's just due diligence. But beyond that, it's going to be a peace sign. I do usually look at the priest, give that guy a peace sign. I feel like he's looking for it. And so I'll give it to him. That's fine. But again,
that's such
a
good point. People always forget the priest. They always forget the priest. You can't do that. Don't forget the priest. That's someone that's going to guarantee give you some peace back.
That's right.
that makes a lot of sense. That's a great idea.
Yeah, in fact, if you're really worried about getting an FPS, you might as well just make a point to sort of have laser eye contact with that priest the whole mass before the peace sign. And by the time he's uncomfortable enough to kind of be looking at you, when there's that little state of exception where people are kind of wandering around, he's definitely going to be looking for what you're up to. And you can make sure to flash him that peace sign.
Now, this is pre-COVID, which is interesting. But there used to be, when I a church I used to go to in the U.S., there was this older couple who, I guess their health wasn't not always great, but they would always, instead of shaking your hand, they would put their hands together, like in sort of a pray hands, and then kind of give you a little bow and say peace. I thought that was pretty good. Cool.
Yeah, that's respectful. I like that. It's not quite as attention-seeking as, for example, pointing with two fingers at your chest and making sure people see the Peace Me shirt that you're wearing, but I do think that's pretty good.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So if you're going for a lot of peace, I think the peace sign and just sort of verbally giving it to people is probably the way to go. It's not the same as, like, you know, shaking someone's hand, but, like, if you're just trying to get the most, I think that makes the most sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, what's a respectful way to do that? Maybe if you're behind some people, let's say, okay, here's what you're going to want to do. You're going to want to strategize this whole situation out from start to finish. You're going to want to come to Mass not too early. Like, there needs to be people in the pews. And you're going to want to find a pew where there's somebody who seems to be kind of on their own. They're not there with anybody else. They're just there by themselves. You're going to want to sit behind them, but kind of off to the side so that you're in their peripherals. And when the peace moment happens, you can clear your throat a little bit and just make sure that you're kind of beaming a stare at the back of their head, giving them all the vibes that you want to give them peace. I feel like that's going to guarantee you at least one.
Hmm. That sounds good. Man, I'm kind of shocked how much you have to say about this. Well, maybe I shouldn't be shocked. It just seems like you've really thought this through. A lifetime of passing the peace. You have a lot to say about it.
Look, I'm not going to say I wrote that question on Reddit r/Catholicism, but I'm going to say, yeah, sure. I've spent a lot of time thinking during this.
Well, then I'm going to ask you the next one. We're going to go right through these and get them answered before this episode runs out of time.
Great.
So in Job 40:15-24...
Yeah, you don't even need to quote it. I remember it.
Yeah. I'm not going to quote it, but what we do get is a reference to a giant sea creature named Behemoth.
Yeah.
Everyone loves this guy. The evangelicals, they especially love him because it's like he's a dinosaur who's in the Bible who lives the same time as people. But this question asker on Our Christianity asked, "What do you think Behemoth is? It definitely seems to be referring to a real animal, but which one? My Bible down in the notes says it's a hippopotamus, but the way its tail is described doesn't fit since it sounds much bigger from the description. Thank you, and God bless." So, Dean, what do you think Behemoth is from the Bible?
Right, classic cryptid watch. It's one of the most famous cryptids in the Bible. What do I think it is? I think the creationists have it right. I think it's a big dinosaur that survived. It's a plesiosaurus or something wandering around in the Mediterranean. And I agree. I've seen all the explanations of what it could possibly be. I've seen the explanation of a hippo, an elephant, and I do think the tail is really the sticking point. I forget what it says. It's something like the tail is like a cedar. I don't know if you've ever seen a hippopotamus, but that is not a cedar-like tail. If anything, it's a bit of a twig. So, until an artist can really render this behemoth just on its own terms without reference to any living or dead animal, and I think, okay, that's the one for sure, I'm going to think the creationists have it right. I mean, it's in the Bible. It's right there. What more do you want?
There is a really famous watercolor of Behemoth that is by William Blake. I've looked it up. Mm. I did not know that off the top of my head. Anyways, he's made a watercolor of Behemoth and a watercolor of Leviathan. Leviathan's the water cryptid.
That's the water one. Monster. All right, I'm getting them mixed up here.
Yeah, sorry. I think I did say water at the beginning, so I'm contributing to the problem. There's Leviathan, which is the Loch Ness Monster.
Right.
And I will not take any other response from. And then there is Behemoth, which does look kind of just like a rhinoceros.
Mm-hmm.
You are correct, though. In Job, it says that his tail stands up like cedar, mm-hmm. like a cedar. So who could say what that is? But probably a big dinosaur.
Sounds like it to me.
I don't know what else you would say it could be. I think it's just a dinosaur. I'm not a young Earth creationist. I'm not a creationist of any kind, but it just sounds like a dinosaur, and I think that's great.
Cedars are big. Yeah, why not? Keep the Bible weird, you know? That's the key.
Keep the Bible weird. That's good. A good word. All right. Let me ask you another question, Dean.
I'm ready.
This is another one from the Christianity subreddit, not the Catholicism subreddit. So a different brand of weirdo. So they write, so I was playing a game before school on my computer. I was playing on a website, and it had a game. I don't want to say the name of the game because I don't want to in any way advertise for these people. I think it's just a weird flash game, though.
Sure.
So there are 7 iterations of this game, and they played them all 1 through 7. But the 7th one was uncomfortable because in the game, you beat people up who are in heaven. So that's part of the game. You can imagine that if that's the premise of the game, at the end of the game, you have to fight God. So that is what happened to this person. But the person says, I didn't fight God because it felt wrong, even though it was a game. So if I were to keep playing, would it have been a bad thing? So, Dean, here's a really unique question that can only be asked and answered in 2024, the year of our Lord. If you play a video game, and in that video game, you fight God, is that a problem? Is that bad? Is that a bad thing? This person asks, and I'm asking it too.
Mm-hmm. Great question. I mean, there are so many factors here. It really depends on what God's doing in the video game. I feel like you're really just killing an idol at the end. And in fact, you should be really excited to do that because you're doing the Lord's work by doing it. I feel like that's kind of my base response, base answer. If Richard Dawkins had any hand in making it, probably shouldn't play it.
Great point. I was thinking first, like, the game is not like Jacob Simulator, but if it was, that would be kind of rad. if you were Jacob in the game and you did just wrestle God the entire thing, that would be cool. A great game idea.
I think there is a video game, a fighting game where you can play as Jesus and a variety of other deities. So you could always try it and just kind of see how it makes you feel. I think also, though, if your conscience is like, don't do that, you should just listen to it. Because, you know, what might be right for some person, for some people, is not right for others. And for me, it might be great to sort of kill whatever representation of God is at the end of that video game. But if it's not right for you, I think that's fine.
Wow, that's some really sage advice. That sounds good.
I got it from Paul in the Bible. It's no big deal.
He said it. No big deal. Paul, the communist organizer in the Bible. You can listen to the other episodes where we talk about real things if you're interested in that. All right. Here's another one for you. I like that we're doing these rapid fire. This is more satisfying than the way we usually do them.
I think so.
Okay. This is an Our Christianity question from 17 days ago. The title says, in the Bible, it says not to eat creatures in the water that don't have fins and scales, right? Mm-hmm. But my family loves to eat shrimp. What do I do? I was reading the Bible and I saw something about saying to eat creatures in the water. Nope, here's the thing. I don't need to read the body of this. The Bible says don't eat shrimp, but my family loves to eat shrimp. Mm-hmm. What do I do?
Yeah.
My family loves to eat shrimp. We are Christians, maybe Catholic, IDK. The difference. my aunt was eating shrimp the other day. I told her what it said in the Bible. I even showed her. She said, I don't care. It's not like it's a sin. So, Dean, what do you think? This person, they think the Bible says not to eat shrimp. Their family loves shrimp. What do you do?
I think you listen to your aunt. She sounds great. She sounds like she's got a good head on her shoulders.
I don't care. It's not a sin, says this aunt. I love that.
I think you can basically say that about most things in life and just kind of allow yourself the peace of mind you need to get through the day.
Probably better off if you're like that aunt. You know, I think it's rare that aunts have a lot of good things to tell you and good guidance to give. So embrace the times they do. So just eat the shrimp, I guess.
Take that W for sure.
Dean, now this is a Catholic question for you, a Catholic person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a great highlight of the ways that our brains betray us as people who are Christians. So I don't know. You can help us through this one.
Before you read it, I just want to see if we can save some time. And by the time you get to the end of it, will I be able to say, I don't care, it's not a sin? Because I just want to be clear, now that we've unlocked that cheat code, I feel like these are going to be pretty easy.
No, this one has to do with a little bit of the magic of the Catholic Church.
All right.
Okay. So the question is, did my priest invalidate my confession? I went to confession today to confess that I've withheld a mortal sin from my past 2 confessions. Whoa.
Plumber.
I confessed to a priest different than my normal priest. I reconfessed all the sins I've already confessed as well as some new ones and a large list of old ones I could remember. However, when he got to the absolution, I'm 50% sure he did not say, I absolve you. Instead, said something like, may God absolve you. Again, I might just be suffering from OCD or something similar because I'm not 100% sure. So anyways, there's a lot more, but should I go back and redo my confession or should I just place trust that the priest did it correctly? So what do you do when you are not even sure the priest knows what he's doing? This priest, does he even know how to forgive someone's sins? I love this question. It's so funny.
All right. You did promise me the cheat code wasn't going to work, but I'm here to tell you it does work. I don't care. It's not a sin. It's so easy. Don't even worry about it. The priest gave you a big clean bill of health. You can walk right out of there. Conscience clear. You did your due diligence. You sat down with a weird guy that you don't know, with a screen between you for kind of a long time. You said a lot of weird stuff that you wouldn't say to anybody else and probably shouldn't. And you got out of there basically clean. I feel like you know, again, take the W.
Okay, take the W. This is good advice. Man, I think that Christianity has such a bad way of making us really doubt our own forgiveness or our own moving past of things. And it's such a bad thing within Christianity. You shouldn't do it. Just take the absolution. Good God.
Yeah, 0 out of 10. Okay, you might have a few Reddits. Do you have more?
I have one more, and I swear it's a good one.
Oh, it's great. I'm here for it. Let's do that, and then I have one more segment for you after that.
Oh, thank God. All right. One more Catholic question from the Catholic subreddit. Now, this one's tough. Are some objects more inherently evil than others? Can some objects be redeemed, but not others? The person writes, I did not take drugs or drink. Yeah, right. The thought popped into my mind. Are some objects just pure evil, while others are born evil, but can be good later? Any Catholic material in this? I'm serious. For example, a Kubelwagen made in Nazi Germany. That's a, in case you don't know what a Kubelwagen is, Dean, that's like a Nazi car.
Thanks. I mean, I obviously knew what it was, but I'm glad that you said so for our listeners.
Yeah. Nazi car used for bad things. So a Kubelwagen made in Nazi Germany was theoretically conceived for genocide and total dominance in the fronts. Can it be redeemed by using it as personal transport for a local priest after the war or something? Gosh. A Mauser rifle used to gun down two innocent children in the Eastern Front. This person has a real World War II fixation that's, I think, indicative of something worse going on in their life. Anyways, so this gun, can it be somewhat redeemed by converting it into a hunting rifle or something? On the other hand, now this is a big one. This is a big on the other hand. A Ouija board was conceived for contacting the dead. There's no real way for it to be redeemed other than destroying it or by putting it in a museum, which doesn't really count as a redemption.
A lot of Walter Benjamin thoughts here.
Yeah, I know, big time. The grimoires seen in the Bible were by being burnt. The grammar, again. Frankly, I wouldn't want that kind of stuff around me either. So again, what's the church's stance on this? So the church's stance on objects being evil. Dean, so does the cheat code work here, or can we? Do you have to really put some thought into this one?
No, that's great. The cheat code does not work here because you need to figure out whether or not it is a sin. Let's see. I'm going to say that absolutely some objects are just cursed in a big way. I've read enough media theory to know that basically all objects are cursed and will ruin your life just by virtue of kind of being a person in the world, but some are especially cursed for sure. Don't think you have to worry about the Ouija board, but definitely, like, a priest shouldn't drive Hitler's car around Germany after the war. I think that is a cursed one. The only way to redeem it is to, I don't know, take it apart and turn it into a carnival ride or something else altogether. Who could say? But yeah, there are cursed objects. Seems like a pretty Catholic situation to me, for sure.
So that's such an interesting thing that you are saying. I'm with you for sure, right? There are some things that can you redeem them? I don't know, but you could definitely take them apart or use them for something different. You can you know, beat your sword into a plowshare, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But the commenters are really upset about this one, actually. Surprised that these weirdos are upset about this on the Catholic subreddit. Anyways, a lot of people are saying, no, things don't have souls. They can't be redeemed. An object that's made for an evil purpose is just an object.
Wrong.
But I feel like this is, wrong. Big time wrong. I mean, whether or not they have a soul, doesn't matter. That's stupid. Who cares? That seems like not a real problem, but they do have potential, and that is the bigger problem.
These people do not believe this, yeah. Because listen, if you posted on our Catholicism, I walked into a big church and dumped my Mountain Dew right in the middle of everything. Nobody was there. Don't worry about it. Is that fine? I guarantee you, everybody's going to say no. You're going to get downvoted into oblivion. They're going to be like, you should never have dropped that Mountain Dew in there. And what is that other than a correct recognition that spaces, places, objects, etc., there's spooky stuff going on there, and you shouldn't dump your Mountain Dew on it. I think that's so clear. I think these people are being dishonest.
No, I agree completely. There are more comments that are saying that tools have no inherent morality, which is such a frustrating thing because like they clearly do. But that seems like such a weird thing to believe if you're Catholic, especially totally. Because like, I don't know, man, the Catholic Church is full of just like magical things.
Oh, yeah.
There's all kinds of like, I don't know, here's a chalice that can levitate. Here's a saint's finger that does something. You know,
that's
it's
right.
Just like, come on.
Yeah, this is, I mean, look at how successful Protestantism has become. We made a huge mistake. I think we need to go back. Sorry, Matt, you're coming with me. We're going to sort it out.
I'm going to leave a comment down here that just says Protestants, all of you.
They're going to love that. All right.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm now exercising executive podcast authority to move us on. And I'm going to move you to a great icebreaker that my wife made up recently, which is What Would Jesus Do? Is the title of it. And it actually is just asking would you rather questions, but then it's not so much would you rather do it or do you think Jesus, what do you think Jesus would do in light of it? So I have pulled up a list of would you rather questions here from a website called signupgenius.com. So you know they're pretty legitimate, pretty good.
Yeah, okay.
So let's just start with some easy ones here. For example, would you rather go deep sea diving or bungee jumping? What would Jesus do? Do you think he'd rather do deep sea diving, bungee jumping?
Yeah, here's the thing. Jesus could not do deep sea diving because of the walking on water. He would get out there and he would just walk on the water and he could not deep sea dive through it. He could, I suppose, if he really wanted to, but everything so far that I've read about this guy tells me that he would just walk on that water. So bungee jumping, I guess. I mean, sort of like he's already ascended, you
right.
know, he's already up there. So what is bungee jumping but the reverse of ascension? seems like Jesus has already done that.
True. I mean, the incarnation is kind of the big bungee jump of God, if you think about it. So he's already done that.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. He's plunged down to earth and then he bounces right back up. That's
you
great.
Know that wow. metaphor has been used. It's been in some like incredibly boring Christian pastor's book, The Bungee Jump of God.
100%.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And if it hasn't been, copyright TMTMTM, big idea. You can get me that for your next get at me for your next VeggieTales story. Okay, would you rather have nosy neighbors or noisy neighbors? What do you think Jesus would prefer?
I keep formulating an idea in my head about this, and then I keep stopping myself because it's a bad thing to say. Jesus, I think noisy neighbors are fine, right? People making a joyful noise, oh, that's great. Jesus is all about that. A nosy neighbor, no thanks. Hide that under a bushel.
All right, fair enough. Let's do some rapid fire ones here. Here's one. Would you rather be without your smartphone for a week or not use Alexa for a week?
Oh man.
What do you think Jesus would prefer?
A tough one. You know what? He's out there spreading the good news, right? He's always talking to everybody. And I feel like we're Jesus, you know, here bodily on earth in 2024, he'd be posting with the rest of us. So I feel like giving up Alexa, no big deal. Who cares about Alexa? One idol among many, just one more voice to ignore. But Jesus, probably a real poster, I would say, would not want to be without his phone.
True. All right. Would Jesus rather be stuck on a broken ski lift or in a broken elevator?
You know, I get the feeling.
Does he want his feet dangling or stuck on
right,
the floor?
Right. I would say he would probably rather be stuck on the ski lift, out amongst nature, at least, right? Inside does not seem like the place that Jesus would want to be. What's your impression of this guy, Dean? Do you think he's an inside guy or an outside kind of guy?
Tough to say. I feel like a broken ski lift does sort of seem more Jesus-y, but a broken elevator suggests that he was kind of among the people in a way that feels more in character.
Okay,
to me. You know, modern day Jesus. He's more likely to be in an elevator building than off at the ski resort.
That does make a lot of sense, right? Because a ski resort is a little too bourgeois for this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right, last one I'll give you here, which is, do you think Jesus would rather work more hours per day but fewer days, or fewer hours per day but more days?
I would say the 10-hour day sort of situation. You know, when Jesus is on his grind, he's on the grind. He's out there. He's spreading the good news. He's telling people parables. But he has that extra day because he's got to consider the lilies of the field. He's got to think about the birds of the air, you know?
True.
He can't be in an office 9 to 5 every day.
True.
He's got that flexible working plan.
True. That's right. So he's out there. He's making his tables. He's making all those weird chess sets for the local Rotary Club or whatever. He's gonna do that start to finish. He's going to binge all that work so that he can get out there.
That's right.
I feel like that also frees him up to do some more kind of street preaching and, you know, yelling at, I don't know, religious figures, whatever else he likes to do.
That makes sense. Yeah, you got to have that extra day to be out there amongst the people. Makes a lot of sense. Great.
That's it. That's what would Jesus do?
Man, entertaining and scary. Usually on this podcast, I know what I'm going to say before I get on it. And it's usually, you know, something about whatever, philosophy, some book we're reading. But this one was tough because I just didn't know.
Yeah, it's a real kind of amateur improv hour over here for sure. Let's see. We've talked for 45 minutes. I feel like, you know, we haven't recorded the last two episodes, so we've been off for 2 weeks. I feel like this is enough to kind of warm ourselves up, and I don't know, we can read a book probably for next time. It'll be a real podcast.
Oh, big time. Yeah, we've got a book planned next week, and then we have some guests planned in the future too, so let's see. Yeah, we've been away for a minute, but we're getting back into it. We're stretching out those muscles. You don't want to tear anything, so we had to start slow. But next week we will be back with something, I don't want to say more substantial because I think these questions were pretty hard hitting, but we'll be back with something more intellectual.
Right. Maybe we should say too, in the Discord, we're all going to be reading Tad DeLay's new book, The Future of Denial. I mean, I say we're all, I mean like Matt and I and a few other people who do want to do it, but, we're going to read that book together, and eventually Tad's going to come on the show and we're going to ask him all these questions about the incredible depressing realities of climate change and people who don't believe in it. So if you want to get in on that and have a chance to, funnel some questions to Tad, you can do that. You can get in on our Patreon at patreon.com/thenativecast at $2 or more. That gets you into the Discord where we're going to have some chats about the book. And yeah, Tad, if you don't know, he's been on the show in the past to talk about his book Against, one of the best books written on evangelicalism. He also did his own podcast about the future of denial, and you can maybe get into the content of the book that way if you're more of a listener type rather than a reader type, but it'll be a nice chance to have a chance to get some feedback from listeners in terms of what they want to ask a great person like Tad. Some other people are reading other stuff in there. Marika's book, A Theology of Failure, people have been reading. People are reading the Bible. A lot of good conversations going on there. Matt posted a great picture of his dog today. Just a lot of good stuff going on. So you can find that at patreon.com/themagnificguest.
There's only one thing to say. The peace of the Lord be with you and with your spirit. That's what you can say back to me. You can mutter that to yourself. You don't have to say it out loud. It's okay. The intro music is by Amaria Armstrong, and the outro music is by The Logical Spoon, and we'll see you next week.
Church in the morning, souls alive. Heaven come to earth and there won't be no church. We'll meet down by the riverside. There we'll swim with all creation. Never get tired, never bored. Don't worry, someday there'll be no dam between us and our Lord.